It's time for Valley Edition, a weekly panel discussion on current issues in the Mat-Su Valley, moderated by Mike Malevsky.
Well, folks, once again, it's time for another edition of Valley Edition, and it's my great pleasure to welcome into the studio Zaz Hollander. Welcome, Zaz.
Hey, Mike. Good to be here. Hi, Philip and Terry.
Okay, and Terry Snyder also in the studio.
Hey, good to see everybody.
And as you had an indication from what Zaz says, Philip Manning calling in from Talkeetna. Welcome, Philip.
Thanks, Mike.
So what I'm interested in, probably first off, since we had this election on Tuesday, October 3rd, and we have some finished results, and we still have some things that are maybe not quite finished, maybe revealed today, maybe revealed in the coming weeks. But let's start up there in Talkeetna with you, Philip. You had a ballot proposition, one item. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so the only thing in just about all of District 7 on the borough ballot was a 3% year-round sales tax for the Talkeetna Sewer and Water District. The system, as I've shared on the show before, the system's been fiscally underwater for quite a while now, and so this was something that was brought up as a possible way to help bring that back around, bring it into the black, and build up some sort of funds for capital improvements, for repairs, that sort of thing. And as a result, the district isn't nearly the size of all of what people consider Talkeetna. It's mostly just the downtown area itself, as well as the area across the tracks in what we call East Talkeetna, which is mostly residential. So only about 270 people were eligible to vote on that sales tax. And as of right now, it appears, it's ahead with some absentee ballots outstanding. The vote tally after Tuesday was 42 in favor and 30 opposed, with 22 absentee ballots issued. So it's possible that could turn around, but it would take a bit of a statistical anomaly to make it happen. So it looks like that, as of right now, I think a lot of folks are expecting that to end up passing.
Okay, and just as background a little bit, Terry Dolan, who's the Public Works Director for the borough, was in to the studio. And we talked a little bit about the history, the background of the situation up there. And my understanding, and perhaps you can add some more to this, Philip, is that for the last few years, perhaps the last 3 years, the borough was attempting to catch up with what might be referred as deferred maintenance that was needed. And that what we're talking about here is an amount of money that will allow the residents of that particular area to begin paying for the deferred maintenance that the borough will be doing on it, and that significant upgrades to the system will not come as a result of that vote. Is that correct?
Not immediately. It won't happen immediately, but it is something that's being talked about for down the road, because you're absolutely right that a lot of the maintenance has been put off and put off, and we're looking at a system that's now just a little bit over 30 years old and had a life expectancy somewhere between 30 and 40 years, as is my understanding. So we're definitely getting to that point, and we're seeing significant issues with the system. There's been a lot of infiltration of groundwater into the sewer system, which is causing the lagoon to fill up too quickly, which is potentially one of the reasons that there's been a lot of compliance issues with that sewer lagoon in recent years. And so they've put a lot of work into that. There's been a loan taken out from the borough to the tune of $214,000 a couple years ago. There's also an ongoing, since there has been compliance issues, there's been an ongoing discussion between the borough and the Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation as to how to address that and what potential fines and that sort of thing might be in the future of the system. And since it is a service area, it's tricky to figure out how to get money to pay for that, since I believe the total number of customers is somewhere just over 190, and the system's total operating deficit that's built up over the last few years is about $500,000. So doing the math to get 190 accounts to make up for that difference is pretty difficult.
So I have a question for you, and maybe Zaz knows the answer to this if you don't. Is there a way to make the service area bigger? Because I guess it could be argued. On one side, there were a lot of disgruntled people because they didn't get to vote. And the way the service areas go, you have to have the direct service, I'm told. But is there a way to widen that service area to include more people? I mean, because at the end of the day, you know, everybody uses it.
Right. There is the short answer. And my understanding on that is that would also require a popular vote. We actually expanded the service area last year, the flood service area. And the way that happened was everybody who lived in the existing area got a vote, and everyone who lived in the area to be annexed got a vote as to whether or not they wanted to be part of the service area.
So do you feel there's any movement on that?
Would be very surprised.
Yeah, and I think this is Oz, Philip has done a great job reporting the years of issues with that system, but also this election and the ups and downs with the borough making a sort of a series of, you know, small mistakes, but mistakes nonetheless, and the naysayers on this tax certainly jumped on it in terms of who could and couldn't vote in this election, which is always an issue, even in a small election.
Yeah.
And this particular district had a fairly high turnout if you look at the numbers compared to the dismal, you know, 5% in some precincts turnout borough-wide, but or in different precincts, because there were no real borough-wide issues apart from school board.
Mm-hmm.
Well, even there, not anymore.
Some people didn't even go.
And so, at any rate, I think part of the issue here with this so-called service area is that, you know, part of the reason the sales tax was, the idea was floated, and it was a seasonal tax, I think, that was supported in the community.
Initially, yeah.
Yeah, was to grab the tourists who are maxing out the system. I mean, there are clearly design problems with the system, maintenance issues with the system, but it gets a tremendous amount of use because in the summer there are thousands of people who come in, many of them off of cruise ships and stay in lodges just outside town and then come into town for a few hours or a half a day. And there are very few places to go to the bathroom.
Mm-hmm.
And so the businesses that are in this district and are taking the load, not to make a terrible pun, but it wasn't intentional and now are being made to pay the price year round. So it'll be really interesting to see how much sales tax is generated and how much of that is, obviously, I would think a lion's share would be in the summertime. But, Philip, I didn't look into this. Are there any kind of revenue forecasts?
It's very tricky to do a revenue forecast at this point just because, as of right now, no business is under any kind of obligation to share what their gross revenue is. So it's been a lot of guesswork. There's been a couple of numbers thrown around, but nobody's really sure at this point. You know, you brought up that it did get changed from a seasonal to a year-round. It also got changed from the initial conversation of about 1.5% maybe up to 3%, which ruffled some feathers as well.
So I guess it could be argued, too, on the other side of it, that the businesses, they benefit
absolutely
from it. So there's that argument, too. But these are always really interesting issues, I think.
Industrial tourism meets local infrastructure.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly.
Well, the other point that Terry Dolan made when he was in here is to remind us all that we live in a second-class borough. And so the kind of powers that are available to a first-class borough or other structures are not available, and that's why we have road service areas, fire service areas, et cetera, and each one of those determines what happens within their range. And I think that's an important point maybe to keep in there. Well, since we're in Talkeetna, I'm imaging Talkeetna. I'm thinking, okay, I'm going down the main street. Any update on marijuana? Because we did have three different votes on marijuana, cannabis production, sales, et cetera, in other areas. What's the status in Talkeetna?
You know, not a ton has changed since the one dispensary here, the High Expedition, opened this summer. There was a lot of opposition, and then when the whole round of renewals of licenses came up earlier this summer, that opposition kind of got redoubled for a while. But on a day-to-day basis, it's not a huge impact as far as what's happening in town.
Okay.
And there is, I'm hearing from Laurel Andrews, who is the Alaska Dispatch news reporter, who's focusing on the marijuana industry statewide. And so she tracks the Marijuana Control Board meetings. And there's still a lot of agitation surrounding the High Expedition and what they've got a proposed manufacturing plant out at the end of Spur Road. And also, you know, have made it clear that they, as would a number of other dispensaries, would like to open a public consumption or on-site consumption, I should say, facility. And so there's, and I did want to ask you about this, Philip. You know, I went to Talkeetna a couple times this summer, but I don't live there. There is opponents of on-site consumption or even of the High Expedition have been telling the board that there's this spike in, you know, people wandering around, smoking joints, that there's a lot of congestion out front, that there is an issue, you know, there's an issue with public consumption of marijuana downtown because that store has opened. And I'm wondering if you've seen any of that.
No more than what Talkeetna already has a reputation
right.
for.
I was going to say, I saw that before there was any of those.
Yeah, and also the guy fishing at 9 in the morning with a beer in his hands.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Okay, well, let us work our way down.
Can I ask one more Talkeetna question?
Oh, sure. Go for it. Yeah.
When was the last, has Talkeetna ever taken a vote on incorporation? I mean, Big Lake did last year. And has that, I'm sure that's been talked about before, and there are certainly some benefits of being a city, as Palmer's found out. Has there ever been that vote up there, and is there, what is the sentiment up there of that?
Yes, there have been, if my memory serves, three separate votes on incorporation, the last of which was somewhere around 10 years ago, and they have all gone down very hard.
Okay.
And right now, the popular sentiment whenever the topic gets brought up, the sewer and water system actually is a big topic on people's minds whenever incorporation gets brought up, because if Talkeetna were to incorporate, then they would most likely have to take on the burden of this problem-riddled system, both financially and physically.
I think that's going to be an interesting conversation going forward here as the state contracts. I think part of the conversation, maybe not vocalized, is the state took care of a lot of those things. But now with the state not handing over money, it may be something that these cities possibly look at again, because they could benefit for a lot of type of direct funding granting that they haven't been able to do before, and they haven't had to do before because of the state. And if the state's not going to have the money to fix these problems, it'll be interesting to see where those conversations go now.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think it's only a matter of time before it comes up again. Whether or not it goes anywhere is anyone's guess at this point.
Okay. Any other Talkeetna questions since we have Philip Pierce, Oz?
I think I'm good. Thanks for answering, Philip.
Well, I have one. I have one because we get a report in every morning from Glacier View about the weather. Mm-hmm. Students at the school there call in. I'm curious, what's the weather like in Talkeetna?
Gorgeous right now. It's been rainy for the better part of the week, but it's gorgeous today.
Okay.
Well, we need some kids at their Talkeetna Elementary to call in.
We might want to do that. I'll check
in
there.
Sioux Valley, one of them.
That could probably be arranged.
Yeah.
Okay, we'll go there. Well, going down the Parks Highway, we're going to head down in this direction, and there is an interesting question remaining out there about the Borough Assembly. We have one seat that apparently has been settled. Ted Leonard seems to have turned back the challenge from Patricia Hogan, and he will be seated as a replacement for Mr. Culligan on the Borough Assembly. But the other seat has an individual who has posed a challenge for the incumbent, Dan Mayfield, and who has a colorful history. He is involved with the Valley Mover. He's involved with a variety of the other things. And I know, let's see, any comments from any of you about that particular race?
It ain't over till it's over. I sort of harking back to Talkeetna again. Last time there was an assembly race in that district up there, Randall Kawaki was losing, I think by almost 70 votes by the time the absentees went out. Now, there was a little higher turnout at that point, so more of those votes out there, I think, but I can't remember. I haven't looked at the data. But at the end of the day, he ended up winning, and it was close. I think it was maybe 45 votes or something, but he did achieve that. So there's a lot of absentees out there. Usually there's some question ballots. My experience is that half the question ballots usually get thrown out, so there's that. And a lot of the absentees are reportedly from the Big Lake area. So we'll see. They started counting yesterday, And I'm told probably take a week, but we'll see how long that how that hangs on. So Mayfield has pretty much said, let's just wait and see. I'm hopeful that we had a strong campaign for mail-ins and this that will change it. And we'll see how that works.
And his challenger is Clayton Mokey, too, who yeah. is a longtime contractor in the borough, has the landfill contract, has the road service area contract in Big Lake, I believe, still.
Yeah,
he's taken off a bunch of other contracts by the borough
right.
for noncompliance issues.
But. He has, and I wonder how all those conflicts when it comes time for the budget and
yes.
if he is seated, yeah. how all that is going to work out. I mean, we've had some of those challenges with past assembly members, but not quite this entangled with the borough, so I guess we'll see.
But it's an interesting race. It's an interesting look at the demographics, at least the voting public in that district. You know, Mokey, I would think, I didn't check APOC before I came in, but they both had some money to throw into their campaigns. You saw a lot of pink signs, you know, Mokey too, and his mm-hmm. wife Roberta have made a brand out of their pink trucks and their pink mm-hmm. Valley Mover buses. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he is very well connected, as is Dan Mayfield out there.
And my cursory look at the results from precincts suggested that there were a lot of people interested. I seem to remember 25%.
That was a pretty good
turnout.
That
was a higher. Yep. Mm-hmm.
It was a very high turnout. So that happened
and
there.
And they split the out, not Big Lake so much, but
the KGB.
They split
one got one end and one got the other.
Yeah, interesting. Do you know which was which?
I didn't. And I'm sure Settlers Bay, whichever. Yeah
farther out.
One. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So we move back down further. We come to the city of Wasilla. Well, the city of Wasilla had voting for all kinds of stuff, but they barely turned out about the same number as here in the city of Palmer, roughly 13%. The mayor was handily reelected. No challenge there, and pretty much a as you might expect vote. The only thing that might be of note is that once again, the citizens of Wasilla were willing to pay for additions to their police department infrastructure.
Yeah. So. No, it really is interesting, and you know, again, with a low-ish turnout, you're really not getting a great snapshot at the public in general. But Wasilla, despite its conservative, arguably anti or critical of government reputation, has consistently been voting for taxes to pay for services. The building the library had a sunset
but not to
clause,
not to maintain it.
But not to maintain.
Right. And they didn't.
Sunsetting taxes is popular, but approving taxes at all is sometimes
challenge.
Surprising here. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And of course, the take care of the school board. The school board sees no change. One incumbent had no opposition. The second incumbent turned back a challenge, and so that will remain the same. On the other hand, in the city of Palmer, we have what is shaping up to be a very interesting change because we have Brad Hansen, an incumbent, longtime incumbent, going on 18, 19 years, will be returned, it appears, depending on what happens in the canvassing of the 94 remaining votes to be counted. But Linda Combs, who's been on that council, will not be going back, it looks like, right now. And the two contenders, Sabrina Combs and Kenny Linden, are pretty much neck and neck, 10 votes apart, as we go through the canvas voting to see which one of them will bring a new face to the Palmer Council.
And that they're saying it'll be by 2 o'clock today. Have you heard any update on that?
No, I haven't. And the interesting thing in that race was the outside influence, or at least the attempts of outside influence on Kenny's race from, I believe it was Jim Maneri and his group, who I didn't report this. Our political reporter has been covering the elections, but that there were some flyers that were passed around, and Linda Combs has disavowed them and criticized them.
Yeah,
publicly.
And interestingly enough, I'm hearing that Edna DeBreeze endorsed Brad Hansen. That was the person she didn't endorse anybody else. Now, I'm not sure that was just a rumor. I would like to say that, according to their website, they're going to start counting at 2 o'clock today.
So we're looking at maybe 5 o'clock to have an
maybe.
Answer.
I don't know what your experience with that, or I don't know.
They're pretty good. 94 votes is a lot easier to do than the boroughs.
Yeah.
So I'd like to turn a little bit to the outside Recently, there was a horrific event that occurred in Las Vegas. There were a number of people from Alaska that were involved in one way or the other. A couple of deaths of Alaskans and perhaps others that wounded in effect. I'm wondering, Philip, from the perspective of Talkeetna, the shooting in Las Vegas, have you picked up any reaction, involvement, et cetera?
Well, first we had a few locals here. A few local ladies were down there, had actually gotten on a plane right before that all started. So there was a bit of a close call for some folks that were local here, which really kind of, I think, put it into focus for a lot of people. As far as reaction, I think largely up until yesterday and in the NRA's announcements yesterday regarding bump stocks, I think it was just a rekindling of the same gun control debate that happens every time there's an event like this. Of course, there hasn't been an event of this magnitude since, you know, Wounded Knee, but it sparked the same debate that happens every time, where you've got people saying we've got to do something about the guns, and then you've got another significant group of people saying no, it's not that, we've got to do something about the people, we've got to. And there has been a bit of an evolution on that, I think, to where, you know, now there's a focus on, well, we need better mental health care, we need that sort of thing. And that's changed a bit, I think, over the last 10 or so years. But up until yesterday, I think it was just a rekindling of the same old argument.
Okay. Locally, Azaz, any sense that you've picked up of reactions here, or Terry?
I haven't heard any difference here. West of La Palma area, that would distinguish us from the lower 48, from America, and the conversations going on down there. But, you know, apart from the conversations that, unfortunately, I would think that people in a number of states are having about people who aren't coming home.
Right. And here, go ahead, Terry.
I think I'm hearing more questions. If we don't have the conversation, when? I mean, I think people are, there's been a little more pushback. After one of these tragedies, there's a lot of, well, we can't talk about that now. We have to mourn for the victims. But I'm hearing a lot more people saying, yeah, I know, I'm tired of mourning, I want to have the conversation. So it's going to be interesting to see if this is the event, and that's what I've sort of thought, is there's going to be an event where there's somebody who's the wrong person who is targeted, or it's just going to be more horrific than we've ever imagined, and it will push the conversation. But it's hard to say at this point if this is the event, if they make a minor tweak to something just to placate a few people, or if they actually take a big leap. And a lot will have to do with the coming election year and how much they hear from people. The interesting thing about Vegas is that I think they published today the list of everybody that was involved, and most of the people were from somewhere else. So if they go back to their communities and they're your person, it's home a lot more than these isolated things that we can turn off on the internet because it's another place in the world. I think that's what makes this significantly different. And it also makes people stop and say, hey, I'm going to a big event. Am I going to be safe? So there, those things in itself, I think, is going to change the scope of where this conversation goes. I mean, I could be wrong, but we just may have to wait for the next one.
Okay. We began this conversation with a discussion about Texas. Let's sort of bring to a close the conversation by looking ahead to the special session that's coming up in Juneau. I believe it's going to be in Juneau. That started out with a one item, and that had to do with revisions to SB 91. And now seems to be a two-item special session, with the governor floating a proposal to have the legislature look at a 1.5% tax up to a total of $2,200 that would be in some ways able to capture monies from people who earn here, even though they're not residents here. There's been some beginning discussion about that. And Philip, once again, taxes, any discussion whatsoever about that proposal in Talkeetna?
Not a ton. I think a lot of the focus recently has been on the local issue of the sales tax here. But, I mean, just based on the records of Representative Eastman and Senator Dunleavy, I would be very surprised if they found their way to signing on to an income tax proposal.
Right. Okay. Zaz, anything that you've picked up?
No, I haven't.
Okay. So what we're saying is it's a wait and see. Some have suggested that this would be a grand opportunity for the legislature to, in some respect, get ahead of itself by actually beginning to do some things that won't be massaged at the beginning of the next regular session, that this could be gotten out of the way, would be discussed. But there are a lot of people that say, good luck with that, I think.
Yeah, and if you believe that, I think you believe in unicorns. It's unlikely.
So as we come toward the close of another edition of Valley Edition, I just would wonder, are there any other topics that people have come up with that they would like to throw into the hot
book? Thousands have been working on a lot of hot topics.
Just please drive carefully.
Yeah, no kidding. That was...
In the last week or so, there's been two fatal accidents, both with, as always, tragic consequences, and one, a pedestrian incident yesterday that wasn't fatal, but was really scary and happened in downtown Palmer, which is unusual.
Right.
Right. And these seem to happen, as you're pointing out, everywhere. There have been some in Anchorage in the city. There have been some on the Parks Highway. There have been in places where you wouldn't think necessarily there would be. And I'm not sure whether it relates to the changing because of the light into darkness, because some of these are happening in the daylight. But that what I have noticed, and I would add and underline, is that I'm seeing more and more people that are coming down the road with only one headlight going. And yeah. I know when that happens to me, I have more difficulty seeing things, whether it's the moose that's casually walking across or a pedestrian or maybe even another vehicle.
I think the important thing is it's kind of like the people from Vision Zero talk about the fatality. They should be called fatalities. They're not really accidents. Most of what we see up here in fatalities are avoidable. Yeah, maybe you can't avoid a moose that runs out in front of you unless you're going. But a lot of it is speed, and it's just people being just flat out reckless. And if you drive that road in and out to Anchorage every day, you will see that a lot. And people have to start owning that, because, yes, we only have a certain amount of roads. There's a lot of traffic on them. But people going the right speeds and not sliding through stop signs and, the red lights are not actually just an advisory. They are a light for you to stop at. And those are all avoidable things. So we have to own that.
Okay. Philip, any last comments?
Just a second for everyone to be careful out there on the roads, especially as we're getting to the point where things are going to start freezing up.
True that. Okay. Well, thank you, Philip Manning, for calling in from Talkeetna. And I want to thank Zaz Hollander and Terry Snyder for both coming in here to the studio and sharing this week. And we'll be back next week with another edition of Valley Edition.
You've been listening to Valley Edition, a weekly panel discussion on current issues in the Matsu Valley, moderated by Mike Malevsky. Valley Edition is a production of Radio Free Palmer, recorded at our studios in Palmer, Alaska. The views and opinions of hosts or guests do not necessarily represent those of Radio Free Palmer, this station, or its underwriters. If you have any comments or questions about this program, email manager@radiofreepalmer.org.